This week saw the launch of the Front Runner, a brand new email for Members Club Ultimate subscribers written by Chris Cook. Chris is a three-time winner of the Racing Reporter of the Year. He joins the Racing Post after 15 years at The Guardian and will be providing his take on the biggest daily stories and tips every morning from Monday to Friday, exclusively to the inbox of Ultimate subscribers. To celebrate the launch of the Front Runner, we're offering new customers 20% off their first year with Members Club Ultimate. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, choose the annual option, and enter code ChrisCook before Sunday, March the 20th. Hello and welcome to the Racing Riot podcast. Charlie, Cheltenham Festival has been and gone. Did you enjoy the week? I saw your videos on Twitter. You were there enjoying life. I wasn't jealous at all.
Of course you weren't. Yeah, I mean, look, I loved the week. It was completely strange to be there, as in it was really weird. I was very fortunate in the position to do the co-commentary with John Hunt on Five Live, and he, you know, fantastic to work with him. But standing up there in the commentary box, looking out over the lawn in front of the stands at Cheltenham, which is normally like people packed in like sardines. And literally, I'd say during each race, there might have been five people out there. And the only thing you could really hear was the sort of overpowering noise of the tannoy and the on-course commentator. It was really bizarre. And the sound, in fairness, in the Best Mate enclosure over the far side of the track, where the Irish staff were all living for the week, they, like 20 of them used to came out after each race, sort of stand on the steps and cheer. And the noise they made was actually incredible because the way it echoed around the sort of cavernous, empty Prestbury Park. So it was bizarre, but racing needed a shot in the arm after some negative stuff in recent weeks. And the festival really delivered on that, because if what you want is to see top-class horses putting in spectacular performances, well, we had a massive abundance of them, mate, didn't we? As in, it was the gift that kept on giving.
We're going to be going through some of the big moments of the Cheltenham Festival, reflecting on Rachel Blackmore, what a week she had, and then talking about the Prestbury Cup as well. So some of the highlights of the Cheltenham Festival. It got off to a fly with Appreciate It. The champion hurdle on the first day was just electric. It was the start of a brilliant week for Rachel Blackmore.
Every decision she made during the week went right, bar the Gold Cup, in all honesty. And yeah, Honeysuckle was the big pressure ride for the week.
And coming into that,
yeah,
we had Honeysuckle, the unbeaten mare.
Exactly.
We weren't sure if she could step up, because you'd had the likes of maybe an Apple's Jade in recent years that had won the Irish champion hurdle really impressively, never turned up at Cheltenham after that anyway. And then you had Epitant, last year's champion, Goshen, who was so impressive at Wincanton. But yeah, Everything just went right for Honeysuckle. It was a very positive ride, and that's what you love to see.
It did, yeah. I mean, Katie Walsh sort of took me to task, but disagreed with me when I said, like, this didn't need, Rachel Blackmore's a brilliant jockey. She didn't need to be at her brilliant best on Honeysuckle, I think. But what I meant by that was, yes, she showed the great attributes of a fantastic sports person in that she delivered under pressure, but Honeysuckle was outstanding in the champion hurdle. And what I meant by it was, she didn't need the tactical nous and make the race winning decisions that she's had to that have made the difference on some horses. This was her delivering a copybook ride under intense pressure, but also with an outstanding partner. And Honeysuckle seems to be getting better and better. You know, we came into this season questioning whether she had the boot for 2 mile in a champion hurdle test. Well, you know, she showed in the Irish champion hurdle on slow ground, she did. We were then worrying, is the ground going to dry up too much for our Epitant and Goshen going to have too much speed? No, not a chance of it. I mean, she showed all the boot and more and was mightily impressive.
Do you think that's the best we've ever seen her?
Honeysuckle?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I really
that's
do.
That's scary,
yeah,
isn't it?
And I think she's getting better, as in her hurdling is getting slicker.
I think she jumps better over 2 miles.
She does, you know, letting her go forward and be quicker pace to run at. She seems to be even more economical through the air. And there was no fluke about this, and there weren't really hard luck stories, certainly not from Epitant's case. She travelled into the race and was readily brushed aside. Charger gives the form a solid look to it. He's ran well in champion hurdles before. The only disappointment for all of us from a point of view of my friendship and stuff like that was Goshen, because it was quite a horrible performance on the day. You know, I mean, we know that he's jumped right before. We discussed on the previous podcast whether the old track as averse to the new track where he ran well in the Triumph Hurdle was going to cause a problem. This had nothing to do with the track. This had everything to do with what's going on between Goshen's ears, unless something physical comes to light, because he just took it upon himself that he literally wanted to go out through the hedge and off of Prestbury Park as quick as possible. And Jamie Moore performed miracles to keep him in between and over the hurdles. And I don't know quite where they go from here.
No, he's definitely got some loose screws, a bit like my podcast co-host. Going down the far side when he was going out to his right, the writing was on the wall then, wasn't it? You could never see him coming back into it. It looked an impossible job for Jamie, and you just cannot do that in a champion hurdler's competitive, and especially when you're trying to give Honeysuckle £7 as a five-year-old. That just will not happen. Gary Moore came out after and said that he probably won't run at Cheltenham again. I'm not too sure about that, because I think his best performance up until the last hurdle of his career was in the Triumph last year. You'd like to think the likes of a Wincanton, a Kempton could potentially be up a street, Sandown as well for the Contenders Hurdle. Maybe he's going to be one of those horses which are not frustrating. Obviously, Cheltenham isn't the be-all and end-all.
It seems to me like he likes to dominate opposition, and he definitely has a wayward streak, so the right-handed track bias is going to be a big thing for him. And like you say, if you're saying it's a right-handed track bias, you know, it's going to be looking towards, you know, bar Punchestown, maybe if they'd be willing to travel him over the water, could be a possibility on a right-handed track for a big target, a grade one. But other than that, it's going to be looking at like Kingwell hurdles, elite hurdles at Wincanton.
Potentially the Christmas.
Kempton Christmas hurdle, yeah, which is another target. And Sandown. So I'm sure, knowing Gary Moore, he'll get Goshen back right. I'm not sure we'll see him in another champion hurdle. And being straight up, if Honeysuckle stays hurdling, it's very hard to see beyond her in the short-term future. I mean, because then we're going to get on to what will happen with Appreciated and horses like that, and Bob Olinger. I mean, they could be contenders for a champion hurdle, but the chances are they're probably going to go chasing.
Put the kettle on when the champion chase. Jack and Poussoir, I was so excited. Unfortunately, well, he travelled into the race, I'd say, like the winner. He took it up, jumping two out, and then just didn't. Do you think he didn't quite get up the hill?
I don't think he did. I mean, for me, I just felt they didn't go very quick in this race. Like, they finished all in a bit of a heap. And if I was being critical of Jack and Poussoir, I thought he over-raced the whole way round. Like, he almost travelled too strongly. He came there full of running and then sort of flattened out. Now, whether it would have been different if they'd have gone quicker and therefore been coming back to him rather than them all being there with a chance jumping the last, I don't know. Maybe it's just a case, again, that he prefers a flatter track and the hill at Cheltenham, which a lot of people have questioned beforehand. I personally didn't think it would be an issue, but maybe the hill is the problem. I just would have liked to have seen a more truly run race to kind of get the conclusive answer for me, because it's not like he ran bad. He's been beat a length and a half. But the way he travelled into it and tanked into the straight, you were almost expecting a sprinter Sacra-esque performance, that he was going to go and shoot away from them, and he just could never get away from them.
Patrick Mullins came out after and said that wasn't the real Shacken. Nube Negra finished second, and I know you've spoken to Dan since. He must have been delighted with that.
Thrilled with that. I mean, like, you know, he had Harry gave him a beautiful ride, but had to drop in, which was, you know, that's the way they ride him, but it wasn't the place to be most of the week at Cheltenham. You know, it was difficult to come from off the pace, and he smuggled him into the race. And, you know, you could say, was he a bit unlucky? I don't think he was. I think Put the Kettle On would have kept pulling out more. This race was run perfectly for her. She was able to be up there the whole way. They didn't go overly quick. They're quickening, and she's incredibly tenacious, isn't she? She's brave and tough. She's brilliant round Cheltenham. I think she's 4 from 4 now at the track.
Great relationship with Aidan Coleman.
Brilliant relationship with Aidan Coleman. She's quite like, she's not an over big mare. She's quite nippy. She travels strongly. Loads of stuff that suits Cheltenham incredibly well. And much as she might be vulnerable around those bigger galloping tracks in Ireland, you've always got to factor in the Cheltenham factor for her, because it is a big plus in her camp. You know, Nube Negra is the emerging horse on this scene, isn't he? Like, last year, as a novice, if you'd have said he's going to be beaten half a length in a champion chase, you couldn't have seen it for 1 second. But after his very impressive comeback in the Desert Orchid and backing it up with this run in the Champion Chase, he's a really exciting addition to the division.
He's going to turn into the album photo of the two-mile chasing division. I can see him coming out in the Desert Orchid once a year and then going to the Champion Chase because he needs to be fresh. Talking about the Stayers Hurdle on the Thursday, and the winner was Flooring Porter under a brilliant ride from Danny Mullins. A horse that probably slipped under the radar going into it, because I think his win at Leopardstown at Christmas, it was, beating Cider Burleigh and Fury Road, I think people thought that they may not have been fully wound up for that and they could improve leaps and bounds. I know Fury Road went off 4-1 second favourite, so that says as much as you need to know. But he just was very good. And the scary thing is he's a young horse. I think he's 6.
Yeah, he's a young horse, and it's another advertisement for the talents of Gavin Cromwell. I mean, this horse was running off 95, like less than 2 years ago, and he's come through the ranks and just kept on improving. And like you say, this was another career best by a long way. I feel like people were very much taking the opinion that the Leopardstown run was him taking advantage of Cider Burleigh and the Storyteller and those coming to the boil, and that they were going to improve past him at Cheltenham, and it didn't happen, did it? I mean, he got a fantastic front-running ride from Danny Mullins. I think we've got to give commiserations to Jonathan Moore. I mean, he missed out on 2 grade ones at the festival, which is a bitter pill to swallow. Much as he was incredibly gracious in his interviews and that, it must have hurt big time. But, you know, racing is all about taking advantage, unfortunately, of other people's disadvantage or misfortune, and Danny Mullins grabbed the bull by the horns and delivered an excellent front running ride, and the horse did it readily. And as you say, he seems to be, he's a young horse, he's an emerging force in the division, and bar Time Hill coming back, he's going to take a lot of beating in these races. Because again, the other thing you were questioning was, he's a slightly quirky character, and they were worrying, I think, that he needed a running rail round the inside the whole way round because of his tendency to go left. Mm. I mean, someone said to me that he's a sort of horse he could do a 360 without a rail there, you know, as in he could go back the other way. And to be honest, I mean, he had a bit of a look, didn't he, after jumping the last, at the gate to the right, actually, but he looked okay to all intents and purposes. Mm. And he's done it readily. Cider Burleigh and Paisley Park give the form a pretty solid look. And I think we have to take from this that Paisley Park's a lovely horse. He's been a good champion, but he is vulnerable. Could he win another Stayers Hurdle? He definitely could. Well, he could on form, but he's not going to be an even money favourite for one anymore.
He's not getting any younger.
No.
Like everything, when you get slightly older, as you'd know, Charlie, things start to slow down.
Yeah, well, this is very true. Much so I don't want to admit it, you know. As in, I'm still approaching my prime, but I mean, for other veterans, I can see that it would be an issue. Yeah.
A horse that goes by that as well as Albion Photo, who tried to gain a hat-trick in the Gold Cup. It's very difficult to do, and it proved that. And we had two horses from the Henry de Bromhead stable battling it out. Albion Photo back in third, Plutard second, Manella Rindo first. And what a training performance this was. And we had him out we had him out twice at the start of the season in relatively uncompetitive grade twos. Then he went to Christmas, the Savills Chase, and fell very early on. Then they went to the Dublin Racing Festival, and apparently Henry de Bromhead just wanted him to get round, put in a decent round of jumping, and we can kick on from there. It's exactly what he did. We didn't finish any closer to Kenboy that day. And then he turns up in the Gold Cup, puts in an outrageous round of jumping, and it was breathtaking. It really was, and it was a fantastic finish. I think Rachel Blackmore had such a brilliant week. And then the money came for a Plutard. I think he almost went off favourite in the Gold Cup. He made the wrong decision. That must be gutting. But a brilliant ride from Jack Kennedy nonetheless.
It was a really great Gold Cup. You know, it's a funny one. I always talk about the Friday. I find the Friday slightly lackluster at the festival, you know, as in because it's kind of all built around the Gold Cup, and the supporting cast is great, but it's not quite like the rest of the week, if that makes sense for me. And the only thing I did feel like, the two stories in the race were Rachel Blackmore winning the Gold Cup or Album Photo winning the third Gold Cup. And it was like Manella Rindo sort of gatecrashed the party, really. But he did it in taking fashion. He travelled like the best horse, jumped like the best horse, and did it readily. Again, I feel like the running, he was sort of idling, and if Aplutard had gotten any closer, I'm sure he'd have found more again.
There must have been doubts, though, because him and Alaho went so hard in the RSA last year, and Champ came back to them.
They
came back to Champ. So there must have been question marks for Jack Kennedy. Do you think he'll stay? But he did.
He did, and he did it very, very well. You know, Aplutard ran a fantastic race in second. Like you say, Rachel Blackmore, probably the one call this week she didn't get right. But this wasn't like, it wasn't one of those decisions where it was a 50-50 call. I mean, I can't imagine it was a difficult horse to plump for in Aplutard. You know, he won the Grade One at Christmas. Manella Indu had blotted his copybook twice in the top company. So you can see why she rode it. But I got the impression in the post-race interviews there was frustration, much as she'd had six winners all week. But I think it irritated her that this was the one that got away.
The ultimate competitor.
Yeah, exactly. And her winning the Gold Cup would have put the seal on a week beyond belief, wouldn't it? And for racing as a whole, I know she doesn't want to make it about female riders, but there is still an element of that. And she looks, for all that, you know, that she's the best female rider we've ever seen, and she's an incredible jump jockey.
Yeah. Again, she potentially looks the best rider in the weighing room at the moment.
Exactly. So, but it is a story, and there's you're not going to get away from that for a few years anyway. And this would have just been the icing on the cake, wouldn't it? But I thought it was a great Gold Cup. Manella Indu looked a very, very good winner. The form looks solid, doesn't it? Yeah. With Aplutard and Album Photo. And again, a mention for the admirable Native River. The rain didn't come for him, but he did what he always does. Plugs. He tried and he kept galloping, and Dickie kept pushing him, and he finished fourth. And I think he's placed in it. Well, he won a Gold Cup and placed in three from four goes at the race.
The novice chases this year, the likes of Shishkin, Envirolan, who unfortunately fell, and Monkfish, they're so exciting. Yet I don't believe they're the most exciting horses in training. I think the most exciting horse in training is Bob Olinger.
He's bolted up, but it was a good ride as well by Rachel Blackmore, because again, you're on it in the most intense pressure, and he looked like he'd been electrocuted early on. You know what I mean? Like he going to the last with a circuit to go, you're thinking for all the world he's gonna bolt. You know, he was that keen, and she's shown brilliant composure and skill to get him back switched off and taking a lead. And then to do all that through the early part of the race, and then to tank down the hill upside Brave Man's Game, who Paul Nicholls has compared to Denman, and literally take off and beat what was by far the deepest field of the novice hurdles through the week,
yeah,
with Galard de Montseil, Bear Gills and Brave Man's Game, and to absolutely schloosh in, it was incredibly impressive. And you were left feeling that if Henry de Brom had wanted, Bob Olinger could be a champion hurdle contender next year, because he's got bags of tow. And the Ballymore has shown it's a great trial of the champion hurdle. You go back to Istabrak and Forheen, Hardy Eustace, there's plenty of champion hurdlers have come from that race. It's unlikely that's going to happen for as long as Honeysuckle's around, though, I'd imagine.
Well, he's big as well, isn't he? I think the scary part about him is I think he could stay 3 miles. I think he could be a Gold Cup horse in the future. I think he could step down to two and be a champion hurdle horse if he wanted. If Honeysuckle wasn't around, I'd imagine that's probably what they would do.
Mm.
So much ability, so much talent, and I do think it. Likewise with Honeysuckle, he'll only improve. He's going to be scary over a fence next season. I think they are going to send him chasing. It's going to take a very good one to beat him in that. The one that could go there, potentially for Willie Mullins, Appreciate It. I know they're definitely going chasing. Could it be the Arkle? Could it be the Marsh? Or I know at the start of the season they thought it was an Albert Bartlett horse, so maybe he's a 3-miler.
I don't think he's a 3-miler personally. Again, coming into the Supreme, plenty of people were trying to say that maybe he was one of the more vulnerable bankers because he was going to lack the toe. He put that to bed in no uncertain terms, and it was a breathtaking start to the week. The difference with him is he's a 7-year-old, so it's not, I'm not saying he's running out of time, but you can see why they're immediately going to go chasing with him, because, yeah, he's going to be 8 by the next festival, and he wants to be getting on with jumping fences. He's got bags of size. I said on the radio that at the top of the hill, he looked like a man against boys, you know, because he's got all that. To go with the talent, he's enormous. And you'd have thought that that would transfer over to chasing very, very well. And with the high cruise gear he's got, the uncomplicated way he is to ride, and he has excellent technique jumping hurdles. I mean, he looks incredibly exciting, doesn't he? I mean, you'd love all these horses to be forced to come together.
The one thing that Appreciate It and Bob Wallinger have in common is they both finished second to Fernie Hollow as a novice. How exciting could he be?
The form lines are there for all to see. Now, maybe you could argue the other two have improved throughout the season.
There's no reason to suggest that Fernie Hollow wouldn't.
Of course there isn't. And that's so it's exciting, isn't it? We all want these superstars, and there's an abundance of them, it seems, around. And Fernie Hollow is a real interesting one to chuck into the champion hurdle mix next year if he can get back, because, yeah, the attributes and the qualities you're looking for are all there, much as you quite rightly say, it will be to his disadvantage that he's a second, that he basically is a novice. He's had one run and one win, and he's going to have to jump straight into open company. But I'm sure they'll plot a route for him to build him up slowly to that, and it's going to be very, very interesting. We've got to talk about Shishkin briefly as well.
Yeah, impressive.
I mean, did what he should do. I thought, if you're Nico de Boinville, you have to be elated how the race set up with Rachel Blackmore and Captain Guinness taking all mankind on. I mean, the guys, I talked to Nico and Harry, and they said they've never been as fast in a chase around Cheltenham as they went there. And for Nico, though, like I say, when he jumped off and jumped two fences, he must have thought, happy days. This is great. My main market rival's being taken on. They go in a right gallop, which is exactly what I want. But you still have to deliver, and Shishkin did that with spades, didn't he? And I can't wait to see him step up into open company, and it makes the champion chase potentially for next year look very exciting, doesn't it?
Going into the arc, or we were saying that Nicky Henderson has this knack of having champion chase horses, the likes of Finian's Rainbow when he comes to the end of his career, Sprinter Sacra when he came to the end of his career, and Altior. Now Altior looks like he's not fading out the picture, but not getting any younger. And Shishkin is the one to come through.
Yeah, doesn't he, Justin? And I mean, again, he's a horse with superstar qualities, isn't he? Supreme novice winner, Arkle winner, with incredibly impressively, looks to have a lovely style of racing that you know, you'd hope would utilise and bring about the prospect of longevity into his career, in that he doesn't do things the hard way. He sort of races quite lazily, jumps economically, and just wins, doesn't he? And so it's going to be very exciting to see him step up into open company. Of all of the sort of this incredible novice sort of division that we've got in the performances, Monkfish was slightly lacklustre.
I agree. He didn't jump particularly fluently at all. Like, if you look at the second, Fiddler on the Roof, no disrespect to Fiddler on the Roof, but you would suspect that Monkfish would have beaten him a lot further in a race like that, especially when people were saying that he could potentially win a Gold Cup. I think what's incredible is there's a horse there that's won a Grade 1 at the Cheltenham Festival by 6 lengths, and we're slightly disappointed.
Just for me, I love the horse, as we've discussed many times before. And I just, what I found refreshing, though, was Paul Townend came out afterwards and said, It's annoying, but we just weren't on the same page today, he and the horse, and it looked that way. Poor Paul, it was what, you know, every time he sort of asked him to come up for a long stride, Monkfish put down and made a mistake, and a couple of times Paul Townend sat still to go in for the short stride, and Monkfish came up out of his hands, and they just weren't in harmony. Now, whether that was Monkfish's first try over fences around Cheltenham and the up and down undulating nature caught him out, because he's found things relatively easy on flat tracks in Ireland, I actually think he'll learn a lot from this experience, and it'll be very interesting to see how he comes out and operates next. But what it did still highlight was what a big engine he's got, because he did make a few notable mistakes on the way round, and it would have been easy for him to get beat. Yet he didn't, and as you say, he still won 6 lengths. And for all the world, I can't wait to see him step up into open company next year. Be interested to see if we get an Envoy Allen clash, who unfortunately ended up on the deck.
The aftermath of the festival was dominated by the Irish dominance, Prestbury Cup. It was 23-5 in favour of Ireland. You just face palm there. Horrific scoreline, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, like, there's an element that if as an outsider looking in, all you want to see is great horses run, well, the Cheltenham Festival delivered, didn't it? As a British person that wants to see competition on both sides of the Irish Sea, it was embarrassing is maybe too strong a word, but not far off it, really, because it was, yeah. You know, bearing in mind, one of those was in the Hunter Chase.
Yeah.
And the other, another one was Chantry House that benefited from Envoy Allen's fall. It could have been even worse.
Very easily.
I feel like it's been coming for a few years now. Like, there's been warning signs. Ireland have been building momentum, getting more and more of a lion's share from it being sort of even Stevens 5 or 6 years ago. It's been going this way. And last week was sort of the culmination of a perfect storm of events that have come together to highlight the disparity at the moment in quality between horses trained in over in Ireland and horses trained in Britain. And I know there's a lot of British trainers frustrated by it, and there's going to have to be things changing, you would imagine, to try and redress the balance. And it's and if it needs to be done now, Josh, because you're not going to redress the balance and by next year it's going to be back to all square. Because like when you look at the talent of the young horses in Ireland that have done all what they've done at Cheltenham last week, it's going to take a few years to redress this balance, even if it's addressed right now.
I agree. What would you propose change?
Well, I mean, my feeling is it's very difficult. And as a lot of people in the aftermath were like saying, this is the one reason that it needs to happen. I think there's many things. The one thing I don't think is it's not a case of that the trainers in Ireland are better than in Britain. We've got amazing trainers here, and I don't need to list them. Just look at the trainers' table and look at their past records. We've got fantastic operators here who are well able to compete with Henry de Bromhead, Denise Foster, or I'm going to say the Cluntra House team, because yeah, that sits better with me than saying Denise Foster, and of course the all-conquering Willie Mullins. But what you saw at Cheltenham last week was actually, it was plenty of others chipping in. There was Gavin Cromwell, Paul Fennessy, Noel Mead, and I've probably missed others out, but it was across the board domination, wasn't it? It wasn't just the big three. My feeling is, for my reasons, I think we need to accept there's too much racing in Britain. There are too many graded contests, certainly early in the season. I'd like to see a concerted effort to have something similar to the Dublin Racing Festival in, I don't know, February time, as a final sort of trial and bringing together of quality horses in Britain before the Cheltenham Festival, to prepare horses for the challenges they're going to meet. Because to me, at the moment, Ireland have it. If Cheltenham Festival is your mecca, Ireland have the right pathway. You know, that they have their sort of relatively easy starting places. They then build up over Christmas to that festival, and they come together and have options, and then they then move on to the Dublin Racing Festival before they then move on to the Cheltenham Festival, and it seems to prepare them much better. And then I also look beyond that and I think, well, a lot of the money, the high-powered owners are in Ireland, and you can see why. Because again, if you're a new money person coming into the sport and you want to have festival success, well, I look at Ireland, and I don't know this for gospel, but I could imagine the training fee is possibly cheaper day in, day out. Mm-hmm. The prize money is significantly better.
For instance, Brave Man's Games, Novice Hurdle, his first run at Chepstow and is beaten by Soaring Glory, that was worth $3,700 to the winner. And Appreciate It's Maiden Hurdle was worth $8,000. That's just a maiden hurdle.
The exchange rate isn't that different.
No. And then also, if you look back at the winning prize money, the future champions novice hurdle this year was €48,000. And our grade one over 2 miles, the Tolworth, is only worth £19,000. And look, I know coronavirus and the circumstances just changed that slightly, but going back to the year before when it was normal, the future champions would have been worth €59,000 and the Tolworth would have been worth 28. So that's almost, well, it is half.
Yeah,
that can't simply go on. And I know that the very tricky thing is where does it come from? How it's very easy to say let's up the prize money,
and the prize money issue is difficult to address.
Yeah.
Like we,
that's a whole new podcast
in itself. Yeah, and you and I don't know enough about it to kind of offer. But if you're a competitor, it needs to change somewhere. And like I said, my final point so you got training fee, prize money. And then when you go into it, because of course success breeds success and demand, if you are looking to festival success, well, you're going to look to the people that have provided most of it in recent times. And that is Willie Mullins, Gordon Elliott, Cluntra House, and Henry de Bromhead. You know, they are showing that year in, year out, in recent times, they deliver. So if you're someone with a lot of money, you can see why they're gravitating over there. And I know that there are a lot of British trainers that want to redress that balance.
You just have to look at it. There is a smaller amount of National Hunt cards throughout the week. There's a smaller pool of graded races, and that's forcing bigger fields and competitive fields. So I was looking at the 2.5 mile novice hurdles, especially over the other side of the water as well. And during the December-January period, we've got the Winter Novices Hurdle, the Shallow, the Leamington, and the Classic Novice Hurdle that all are very, very similar, and the horses that turn up don't usually mix. It's not competitive. However, in Ireland, there's a Grade 2 Navan Novice Hurdle in December, but other than that, it's all down to the Lawlers of Naas in January, and that's the big Grade 1, and all of the best 2.5 milers from Ireland usually go there and then go on to the Dublin Racing Festival. That's a big problem in itself, isn't it? We've got too much racing. If you've got a good novice here, you can easily go for the Leamington, the Classic, or the Shallow and miss the big competitor. Whether in Ireland, it's down to that race at Naas, and you have to go there.
Completely. And so what you're not wanting to... You're wanting to nurture talent to get experience. But then once they have that experience, you want the best to come together and compete. And I don't know, sometimes I feel like there's like... a bit like in boxing now, that there's like this sort of like holy grail of being unbeaten before you go to Cheltenham. But if being unbeaten means that you get to sort of dominate a load of lesser rivals on your way to the festival and then you get trounced, I'm not sure that benefits anyone. I think what we're seeing here is that there probably needs to be a more modern take on the way the racing calendar is structured and trying to not mirror what they've done in Ireland, but right now they're showing that they've got the formula right.
It's working.
Exactly. And we're probably still using a system that's been in place for an awfully long time. And I mean, by nature, often if you win your Challow, you go, okay, well, that's it. We'll wrap them in cotton wool till Cheltenham now. And I just think, I think that there just needs to be some more forward thinking about how we're going to work back from Cheltenham to get the best possible chance of our horses being able to perform on a level playing field. And it's going to be interesting to see what way they go, because as you said, the prize money one is a difficult one to fathom, but there probably is too much of an emphasis on just providing constant racing in Britain rather than focusing on quality over quantity. I read some interesting stuff the other day that over the last sort of 5 years, like the average rating of a normal horse in training has gone up by 5 or 6 pounds. So there does seem to be an argument that there's a constant inflation of ratings to try and almost make it seem like the quality is always improving amongst the horses trained in Britain. And I think this is something else that needs looking at, the handicapping system in Ireland and Britain, and bringing more sort of correlation between the two. Because I don't know, as in maybe it is just that their horse is so much better, but it seems very difficult for us to compete. You know, as in I look at Galloping Deschamps, for example, that sloshed up in the Martin Pike and I mean went round like he wouldn't have been out of place in one of the grade one novice hurdles. And you look at his profile, like he was running in a grade one novice hurdle as one of his runs before the festival. And he's ended up with a mark of
143
when he's been, I think, beat six lengths in a grade one.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. And I just think, would we see a horse in Britain running in, say, the Challow or the Tolworth and finishing fifth or sixth, beat six lengths, given a handicapping chance then of going on to Cheltenham and running in a handicap? I don't know. It's an interesting point, isn't it? I mean, I look at our own third time lucky. I think he was rated 128 before he ran in the grade two at Cheltenham before Christmas. He's been beat an awfully long way by Alexis Ailes' horse, whose name escapes me now.
For pleasure.
For pleasure. And he's ended up going up. I think he went up 12 or 14 pounds for finishing second that day because the horses behind him had high ratings. And you think, is that really fair? Are we giving our horses the best chance when we're handicapping like that, as averse to what you're looking at in Ireland from a similar sort of performance? You know, Wild About Oscar was pulled up in a Tolworth. He's then gone and won a listed race at Exeter well, but you know, he's won it well. I mean, it's not like he's beaten a whole heap. And then he's ended up going into Uttoxeter the other day off 146 for his opening handicap mark. And he's won a handicap, a competitive race, and won it nicely. And he's now rated 150. And as it stands up to now, he's not even won a graded race. And I think, would he have won like a Coral Cup off 150 or 146? And would he have won a Ballymore?
Yeah.
And there's no getting away from the fact that he's an exciting prospect and what a chaser he's going to be. But you just think, when you look at the two sides of these horses from Ireland and Britain, is it a level playing field?
Certainly not.
And it's going to be very interesting to see what the powers that be do and if there are any changes made at all. But I do feel, if there aren't, we are facing up to a prolonged period of Irish dominance.
Thank you very much, Charlie. It's been a pleasure talking about the Cheltenham Festival. Before we go, listeners would like one horse that's going to win at the 2022 Cheltenham Festival. We will come back to this. You can't have Shishkin.
I can't have Shishkin. No. How do you know I was going to say Shishkin?
That's the easy cop out.
A horse that's going to win at the 2022 Cheltenham Festival. Third time lucky, Grand Annual.
Third time lucky Grand Daniel, we believe.
What about you?
I'm going to say Galloping Deschamps in the Brown Advisory.
Roll on Cheltenham Festival 2022.
Can we simulate the next year and go to it? I wish. Thank you very much, and we'll see you in another fortnight.